Dear faithful, Christmas is the feast of the church in which the love of God towards mankind shows in the most clear and bright manner. Jesus is born to us on this day, the high God and Creator, lowering and humbling himself to be carried and nursed by simple men in the midst of cold weather and even colder hearts of men, which are inflicted by sin. This act of love, the birth of our Redeemer, was so great and so perfect that it alone could have been sufficient to have accomplished our redemption had God wished it to be so. Christ could have been born, lived and rise to heaven without any suffering and death, and we would have been redeemed nevertheless. But God, in his wisdom and goodness, he willed otherwise. He knew the weakness of human nature. He knew that we needed the grace of Christ's example, the lesson of his life, and awful warning of his passion and death. Christ himself also knew that we would not practice the Christian virtues unless he showed us how. The lesson that we must bear and do God's will in our lives rather than our own will is often very difficult to accept. But God has planned everything in our lives, and no suffering can ever be in vain. To show this, I wanted on this Christmas to tell you what happened on one Christmas in Exeter, Devon, England, in the 1800s. About 3 o'clock on Christmas Eve, a 13-year-old girl named Jane Moore was walking on the Exeter beach. She came from a well-to-do Catholic family with lots of fortune and servants. But this Christmas, she was in sorrow. She was not cold because she was wrapped in velvet cloak and furs of costly sable. No, but she had used to walk this very beach with her father every Christmas Eve. But now her father was dead, and Jane thought, why did he have died so young when she needed him the most? In her sorrow, Jane heard a shrilling voice of a woman in a great fear of or pain. Coming to herself, Jane found that she was close to the abandoned building which the locals called the Haunted House. Evidently, some tramp, poorer than the poorest, had sought shelter in this haunted house. A haggard woman with her baby was there also, crouching on a pile of seaweed and driftwood, holding lightly to something hidden in the ragged clothing and huddled about her. She was striving to keep it from the grasp of a desperate, half-starved man who bent over her. The man was trying to get a crucifix from the woman, and he cried, "Give it to me, Polly. I'll tell you I'll have it, that I will." To her horror, Jane noticed that the poor man was intended to trample to the crucifix because he was so angry to God that he and his family have to suffer starvation on this Christmas. The woman pleaded to her husband, "No, Tom, it's Christmas Eve. God will send us something tonight for sure. Wait one night, Tom." But this cruel man did not listen, and he shouted that there was no God, no Christmas, it was all a sham, and there would be no crucifixes any place where he stayed. With force, he took the crucifix from his wife and was just about to trample on it when he heard Jane shouting, "Stop, man!" Jane stood close beside him with flashing eyes and her proud and fearless face. "Give me the crucifix," she said. But she met eyes as fearless as her own, which scanned her from head to foot. "And who are you?" the man asked. "I am Jane Moore," she answered, with the ring that was always in her voice when she named her father's honored name. "And what's that to me?" the man exclaimed. "It takes more than names to save this," and he shook the crucifix defiantly. But Jane cried, "Stop, stop, I will pay you well to stop." "Why then, miss?" "Your God died on a cross," Jane answered. "You shall not harm his crucifix." "Speak for yourself, miss. Shall not. There is no God, for else why would you be in velvets and my wife in rags? That's why I will trample this one." In another moment, the crucifix would have lain beneath the heel, but Jane flung herself on her knees. Tears rained from her eyes. She who had been used to command and to be obeyed, now she pleaded like a beggar, with humble but yet passionate pleading, at the feet of this beggar and outcast. She cried, "Wait, wait, oh hear me, truly your God was born in a stable, and he died upon a cross. He loves you, and he was as poor as you are now." "There is no God," the man repeated hoarsely. "It's easy for the likes of you to talk, all warm and comfortable." Jane wrung her hands. "I cannot explain," she said. "I cannot understand. But it must be that God knows best. He sent me. Come home with me, and I will give you food and clothes and money." "No," cried the man defiantly, "I know that trick too well, miss. Food and clothes, sure, but a jail too. And I'll trust no one. Pay me here if you want the crucifix." Jane turned her pocket out. "I have nothing with me," she said. "Will you not trust me?" But in his hard-set face, she read the answer while she spoke. "Very well," she continued. "Take a note from me to my steward. He will pay you." "Let's see it," was the brief reply. Hastily, she wrote a few words in pencil, and he read them aloud. "Now, miss," he said, "it's not safe for me to be outside the town much before dark. And what's more, I don't trust you there neither. Here you'll stay the night through if you mean what you say." "Oh, Tom," the woman exclaimed, breaking silence for the first time since Jane spoke. "It will be a fearful night for the one like she." "Let her feel it then," he retorted. "Wasn't her Lord, she talks about, born in the cold and gloom tonight, according to you and her lass? Let her try it and see what she'll believe in the morning." Like a flash it passed through Jane's mind that the midnight mass among her own people was now to be taken from her, and that, knowing her uncertain ways, no one would think of seeking her till it was too late. But still, with a keen sting of disappointment, a thrill of sweetness mingled in Jane's mind. Was not her Lord indeed born in the cold and the gloom this very night? "I am quite willing to wait," she said quietly. The man went to the door, and Jane watched him till he had reached the further line of the cliff. Then she turned to the half-frozen woman. "Can you rise for a minute?" she asked gently. "I'm going to change clothes with you. Yes, I am strong, and I can walk about and bear it all. But you will freeze if you lie here." And putting down the woman's feeble resistance with a bright, sweet will, Jane got her way. Half exhausted, the woman sank back upon her poor couch and soon fell asleep. And when the baby woke, Jane took it from her, lest its pitiful wailing should wake up the mother. She wrapped the child in her rags and walked the room with it for hours that Christmas night. It seemed to her that they must freeze to death if she stopped. For a time the wind raged furiously and the rain fell in torrents. The first few hours were the hardest she had ever spent, yet she kept saying, "My Lord was cold, my Lord was cold tonight." And across the water she heard the sound of the clock striking midnight. And then all chimes rang sweetly, and she knew that the mass she had so much longed to go had now begun. The man did return as soon as the gray morning twilight broke. He came with haste, told his wife, "Rise and take her child and follow him." He gave no time for the words Jane wished to speak. But when the woman said that she must return the garments which had kept her warm and perhaps alive that night, Jane cried, "No, no, it is if I had kept Our Lady warm for once and carried her child, not yours." And she clasped the baby passionately, kissing it. The man stood doubtful, then tore the rich cloak from his wife's shoulders, seized the ragged one which it had replaced, wrapped her in it, hiding the costly attire, so that his wife wore a costly attire under the ragged cloak, and Jane the rags hidden under the velvet cloak. And then he said, "The crucifix?" "It's not mine," then Jane asked. He pointed to the woman. "It's her one bit of comfort," he said. "Give it to her, miss. I'll never harm them again." And there was no more fearful than that, no more promise of better things. In a few minutes they had disappeared among the pines, and cold suffering, disheartened, Jane made her way homeward. First she stopped at her truest home, for the bells were ringing for the Christmas morning mass. Jane walked into church, and glad in beggar's rags beneath her velvet cloak, she knelt in real humility to receive her Lord. "I do not understand," she said to him, sobbing softly. "Nothing that I do succeed as I like. But my Jesus, I am sure thy will is best. Only I wanted so much to help them for thee. Why was it, my Jesus?" Their years went by, and through Christmas after Christmas, she remembered, with a great disappointment, her longings and her questions remained unanswered. And so it was almost in everything in Jane's life. Her life after that strange Christmas Eve was one of constant heroic personal service for others in the love of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. It pleased God that she should live to an advanced and very strong old age. And it also pleased him through all those years to confirm her with his by constant and peculiar trials. The husband whom Jane loved was taken from her without an instant's warning by a terrible accident. Her sons, whom she so once wanted to become God's holy priests, died in their cradles. Her daughters grew into the fairest blossom of womanhood, only to become the brides of death. And then one Advent, the last remaining friend of her youth sent to her, begging her to come with haste to pass her the last Christmas they could expect to be together on earth. In a little village with no one near who knew her except the servants, and she became terribly ill. And when Jane called the doctor, he said, "This is a serious illness." Then reading rightly the spirit with which he had to be deal, he added, "This is a sickness unto death, madam." "Harness the horses then," she said, lifting herself, "and let me get home and die there." But instead the doctor said that it's too late, you should send for a priest. And when finally the priest came, Jane looked into his face and said with sorrow, that it has always been in this way. From the time that I first endlessly gave myself to God up to this time, he has thwarted me in every way. 60 years ago, this very Christmas Eve, he did it. It all comes back to me as hard to bear as then, and all my life has been like that. And slowly and with pauses, Jane told the whole story of that night 60 years ago. "It has always been so, Father. Whenever I have loved anyone or tried to help anyone, I have failed, or they, the people I love, have left me." The priest listened long and thoughtfully, and then he replied, "My daughter, God's work in a life like yours is much more the subjection of the will than the number of good works for others. Be sure that what we think as a failure is often success in God's eyes, and through his power he asks one last sacrifice from you, Jane. Will you offer to him your whole life which to you seems so incomplete and troublesome when judged by your own plans and wishes, and say to him without reserve that you believe certainly that his way is far better than yours. The priest now held the crucifix before Jane, and she took and kissed it. Yes, Father, she said meekly, may the most just, most high, and most amiable will of God be done, praised and eternally exalted in all things. I had rather die here, O my God, since it is thy blessed will, than in any other place on earth. And the priest answered, Amen. But when the last sacraments had been given, and Jane lay calm and patient now, waiting her death, the priest drew near to her and looked with a great reverence upon her face. My daughter, he said, it is at times the will of God to show us, even here on earth, the good what we have done for him. Be sure his sacred heart remembers all the rest as well. 60 years ago, on this Christmas Eve, my father was saved from a great sin, my mother and I from death, by a Christian woman's love for her Lord. The first confession I ever heard was my own father's last. He told me that from the time he saw that rich young girl in rags, enduring the biting cold for God, faith lived in his heart, and he would not die. I saw him pass away from earth in penitence and hope. For more than 30 years, I have labored among God's poor as your thank offering, madam. God sends you this token that he has worked his own work by means of you all your life long. He sends you this token because you have given him the thing he most desired of you, your will. Jane folded her aged hands humbly. Now unto us, O Lord, she said, low and faint, and then a voice as a son and priest at once spoke clearly, seeing her time had come, and said, depart, O Christian soul, in peace. So, dear faithful, may God grant also to you many more Christmases in his service, and always the trusting that doing his will on this earth brings us peace and heaven in the end of our lives. May God bless you. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost.